Sometimes I feel the need to ask my landlord, just exactly when did God die and how'd you get in the will? And why is it that you own 7 homes and I own none? And for some reason that means you get to rob me on the first of every month. Upon further investigation, I find that land acquisition is just a result of genocide and war. And if we uphold the institution of land ownership, we are saying it's acceptable to kill people just to take away their land. To take their land. Their land. Kill them to take away their land. To take their land. To take their land. Situations like these make me fall to my knees. I cannot comprehend what you don't understand. Situations like these make me fall to my knees. I cannot comprehend what you don't understand. Situations like these make me fall to my knees. Simple matter of greed, do you understand? Situations like these make me fall to my knees. It's a simple matter of grief. Rent is just a scam.
And hey, not one but two theme songs for today's edition of Bathurst Piers Broadsides. Devoid wants to give special thanks to the anonymous donor who donated. And thank you. And thank you from all of us at Free Radio for your donation. I wasn't here when it happened, but I have it on good authority that it did happen. This is, as I said before, the February 15th show. We're the day after Hearts and Flowers Sold in Showers Day. That's Valentine's Day. Lots of interesting stuff today. I've got Capes Up the Yin Yang, and also you may have been reading the Metro and been surprised to actually find a real news story, actually two real news stories in the Metro today. Or yesterday, actually, both by reporter Sarah Phelan in the news, N-U-Z section. It's usually full of tripe, slander, gossip, and puff piecery. This time, however, in fact, this is not just the first time. It's happening more frequently there, I think, because of this particular reporter. There were two stories, one on the resignation of Dan Alper from the Citizens Police Rubber Stamping Board, or the Review Board, as they call themselves. And he gave the community an earful of why he was resigning and how useless and how much of a fig leaf they were. And the second story was even more riveting. It was a story about a woman named Christina Tafoya. We actually had her on the air. We scooped the Metro, but the Metro got out the story too, which I find remarkable. Christina, you may remember, is the Latina woman who was brought down in the Beach Flats, apparently by Sergeants Clark and Vogel and other officers around midnight. She finally got a ticket for being in the, quote, park after dark, where park is the cement area walkway that kind of goes in front of the community trailer in the Beach Flats area. She was apparently trying to use public spaces at night, walking around, and police held her and her two companions, and when she said, "I know my rights," they put her down on the sidewalk, they pulled a gun on her, they handcuffed her, they held her in a car, they learned she was a mom, threatened her child. I actually don't know the specifics about the child. All the rest, in fact, she said she thought of her child, and she eventually, with reluctance, shut up. But when I saw her in court, she hadn't shut up. When she came on the air, she hadn't shut up. And apparently the Metro got an earful. And so the community is learning what the police force is doing in the Beach Flats after dark and what it's doing to women and women of color after dark. Apparently she wasn't the only one this happened to. And this, of course, caused quite a stir in the police department. It's trying to shut down such Metro stories and no doubt shut down Christina. We're hoping she doesn't shut down, they don't shut her down. We're hoping they don't shut you down. And we're hoping that you give a call to us if you've learned anything about police misconduct in the last few months, if something has happened to you that you think needs to be reported and talked about publicly, we want to hear it. We want the community to hear it. The phone number is 427-3772. We are interested in accurate stories, honest stories. I'm not interested in slandering the police force or anybody else. But I'll tell you, there's enough shit out there on the police to bring them down without a single untruth, I'm afraid, in this situation. I'm talking about not just a few bad apples. I'm talking about the general policies that allow those bad apples to rot out the barrel here in Santa Cruz. And that, of course, goes to the management all the way to the top, goes to the Police Officers Association, goes to the city council, goes to the city manager, goes to the city attorney. All these people get implicated in that process and are, in fact, implicated, I'm afraid. Whether you want to call it criminal behavior or negligence or bad politics, you figure it out. You use the terminology. I just want to see an end to police violence. I want to see an end to unlimited blank checks for the police department. I want to see the community have some real control over the police force. I'm hoping that those of you out there who are listening also want that as well. Phone number to call into this show is 427-3772. 427-3772. I'm your host, Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norse. I'm going to be with you here on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3 for the next 2 hours. And you are invited to call in and join this discussion, 427-3772. We cover a variety of topics, including, obviously, police misconduct. We also cover things like laws against the homeless and practices that discriminate. We cover city council politics, because that's unfortunately what we're stuck with here at the local level. I really focus on local stuff, because it's interesting. Our city council members and some members of our so-called progressive community are just real fine on issues far away in foreign countries or safe issues. They go to demonstrations in Seattle and Washington, D.C. and Philadelphia and Los Angeles, and so do I, different times. But they come back to Santa Cruz, and you can't hear a peep out of them when the homeless people get ticketed or harassed for sleeping at night, when three activists get barred from city council for simply exercising First Amendment rights to demand that the sleeping ban end in a peaceful way. That's happened to me, Becky Johnson, and Bernard Klitzner at City Hall in the so-called City Council Coffee Clatch and Tag Team Teach-In. We were enjoined, as you regular listeners know, and the Ruth Hunters, the Bernice Beltons, the Sandy Browns, all the bigwigs, the Tom Shavers, the Ed Porters. We don't hear a word from these progressives about this abrogation of the Constitution. We don't hear a word from them about ending the sleeping ban in any public and clear way. We don't hear a word from them about rent control, for that matter, in any clear way. And that, of course, means that their political power is being misused, and that they shouldn't have it. I'm going to be playing for you now, speaking of rent control, an interview with activist Bob LaMonica. Some people think Bob is too strident at times. I've had my problems with Bob on and off. Bob, I think, has been a dedicated proponent of rent control for as long as I've known him, and he seems to be one of the few people in this community that's actively attending San Jose meetings for the last half year, apparently sparked by San Jose Mercury news columnist, I think it's Joe Rodriguez, and that's they're looking into rent control over in San Jose, and Bob is giving us regular reports. I want to thank him for that. Bob's also been a devoted supporter of ending sleeping ban criminality, hate crime, whatever you want to call it. What the city does when it issues a $54 ticket to a homeless person at night when there's no legal place for them to go, but 1,000 or 2,000 of them are roaming around inside the city limits just trying to hide, get out of the rain. And they face increasing gentrification, they face increasing criminalization, and they face silence from Mayor T.R.O. Tim Fitzmaurice. T.R.O., of course, stands for Temporary Restraining Order, which is what Fitzmaurice gave those of us who peacefully tried to lobby for a change in his sleeping ban. Let's hear a little bit about rent control from Bob LaMonica. Let's get an update. This is a week or two old, but it's still relevant.
Well, it's February 2nd, 2001, and on the line with me I have a rent control activist, Bob LaMonica. Bob, you have some rather interesting news for us.
I think it's quite profound. In fact, I used the word twice last night at the meeting in San Jose for tenants' rights. There's a Tenants' Rights Association that has been formed. I think they give the date of January 18th. It had its second planning committee meeting last night. And they have developed an action plan, which I think is quite serious and very sincere. It's a three-pronged action plan for short and long-term results. The first thing they're going to go after is tenant defense, activism organized around immediate needs of renters in distress, protests, and in fact, one of the people that spoke used the word shame to shame landlords to show them what they're doing.
Tim Fitzmaurice wouldn't like that, I don't think.
Huh?
Oh, Tim cautioned us against using shame around the sleeping ban. He thought that shame was not the way to go, so...
Well, I'm afraid that I'll pass on a response to that, Robert, but this is protest in the classic form. This is what civil disobedience is. This is what the First Amendment is. This is the right to petition for a redress of grievances.
Mm-hmm.
When you have elderly people being forced out of their apartments, being forced into living with their children because they can't afford the 50% overnight rent increases, then it's time to organize, and it's time to have protests, and it's time to shame people.
Right. I agree with you. So that was the first of the three prongs. What were the other two prongs?
Tenant defense. The second one is to work on a just cause eviction ordinance, which should happen here in Santa Cruz, too. This can happen even with Costa Hawkins. Just cause eviction ordinance would eliminate a lot of the manipulation around evictions. It would lay out a process for evictions that's not there now.
I would say that you can't only evict people if there's a good reason for it.
Exactly. Okay. It would clarify the law on eviction. And the phrase just cause, you can't just evict somebody because you want to, because they're protesting in front of your building.
Or because you want to raise the rents, have some other people there. I guess you could raise the rents without evicting them, but you can't just evict them, right?
What's that now? You can just evict them?
Right now you can just evict them, but with a just cause law, I would say they would have to have done something definable on one of a specific number of things, right?
You bet. Let's see, examples of eviction for good reason, non-payment of rent, creating a nuisance, failure to sign a requested written lease if required. You know, these are sensible things. You can't just boot somebody out because they're being political, which is happening more and more.
Well, isn't, you know, and I know that...
In fact, Donna Dice fought this.
Yeah, she did. Oh. I was about to say that. She fought... There is currently a provision in the law which provides for, I don't know, you get damages if they attempt what's called a retaliatory eviction, right?
Right. There would be some stipulations regarding the elderly, people with families and the like, disabled.
So would it make it easier to win a retaliatory eviction suit, or would it simply continue the existing practice of...
It would make it more difficult for landlords to remove tenants without proper authority. It would give some clout and backing to tenants. This is the basis of tenants' rights legally.
Uh-huh.
It can be accomplished. Just cause eviction ordinance makes a great deal of sense. I think what's happening, Robert, is the emotionality of these issues.
Before we leave that,
away. Go ahead.
Sorry, Bob. No, it's good. Before we leave that just cause eviction, do you know if there's any other city, either in California or in some other state, that has like a model just eviction law that the San Jose group is looking at?
Not that I know of. In fact, I will do some research on that. I can give you a phone number if you want to call.
Sure, why don't you give it to me?
No, this is the Association of Community Organizations for Reform Now, ACORN, 408-729-8860. They're part of this coalition of the Tenants' Rights Association.
Uh-huh.
Not that I know of. I think just cause ordinance, Oakland tried to get an initiative on the ballot last year and failed, okay, for just cause eviction.
Uh-huh.
So this is a movement that it can be accomplished even within the confines of Costa Hawkins, which is a statewide bill that severely limits rent control and other measures.
It has what's called vacancy decontrol, so that any local rent control measures cannot control rents if an apartment is vacated, right?
Well, also, nothing built after 1995 can have rent control imposed on it. Those cities that have rent control that have exempted portions of their rental property. Like San Jose, anything that's built after 79 in San Jose is exempt from rent control. Nothing that they do now would modify that unless state law is modified. So what I see coming out of all this effort is a movement to challenge Costa Hawkins, and that's coming out of Randy Silverman and another woman that he's working with, which is Christine Monahan from the Western Poverty Law Center. There's going to be a challenge to Costa Hawkins, which is this mid-90s, I could be wrong about this, Pete Wilson kind of gratuity for vested interest. There's something fundamentally wrong with this denial of tenants' rights, of non-vested interest rights. And how this bill came to pass would be interesting to know, who signed it and who didn't, whether it was just rubber stamp. Uh-huh. Who was asleep at the wheel when this went down? Who was bought and paid for when this went down?
Are there actually state legislators who want to bring up some kind of repeal or modification?
Not that I know of. This remains a very provocative hot potato, which is what's so profound about the SEIU in San Jose stepping forward.
Uh-huh. The SEIU, of course, is the Service Employees International Union?
Yes. Now, it looks like, and I don't want to kind of wave a flag too quickly, but it looks like there might be some action, activism happening here locally. The SEIU is ideal for this situation.
They've already endorsed it in San Jose, you say?
They have. It needs to be properly incubated. The SEIU is an ideal catalyst for this kind of a movement, and I think it's proper.
What exactly did they endorse, specifically?
Of course, tenants' rights. They endorsed the activism to create a tenants' rights movement. And rent control. They went so far as to endorse the concept of rent control.
The dreaded words rent control were actually
absolutely
uttered.
In fact, John Doherty, I gave him one of my rent control buttons from our campaign here in Santa Cruz. He's been wearing it. In fact, they want to use our model for buttons for their campaign. That word, that phrase rent control, it is provocative, but it strikes a chord with people. It's much easier to explain than just cause eviction ordinance and the like. It's a long-term goal. It's something that can happen over the next several years. In fact, Randy Silverman raised that if this movement truly is catalyzed, within a couple of years, we could see a challenge to state law.
Now, you mentioned there's three prongs. The first prong, again, is, you say, eviction defense. And what kind of form would that take?
It would take, Donna Dice did a lot of good work along this line. It would take...
she's the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz.
Collecting unlawful detainer information, providing tenants on eviction distress with legal data that they can use to challenge their eviction, to protest gouging by landlords with visible activism, that kind of stuff. An activism aspect of a tenants' rights association.
Now, was Donna Dice actually, was that she at this meeting?
No, she was not. In fact, Donna, I think, should plug into this. I think Donna would have some good perspectives to give. Donna,
you'll be making contact with her?
Into whatever activism we have here in Santa Cruz.
You'll be making contact with her, you think?
Oh, absolutely. I would hope she'd be listening to your show, too, Robert.
She does.
What's that?
She does occasionally,
I think. In fact, I'll give her a call.
Now, what about the third prong of this?
Control. The third prong is rent control. Rent control focused.
So we've got
tenant defense, just cause eviction ordinance,
uh-huh,
and rent control.
Uh-huh. I see.
All right. So these are long and short term goals. These are goals that can produce results in the immediate, and goals that can produce results in the long haul. It's a good plan. There were in this planning meeting that I was at last night. Oh, 35 people.
Mm-hmm. Any media coverage?
At that meeting, no. There has been coverage for prior meetings, and we'll see how it all goes.
Uh-huh. And when is your next meeting?
The next meeting is a planning meeting on Thursday, February 22nd, 6:30, also SEIU, 7:15. Over the Hill, which is at 2960 North 1st Street. And I'll be at that meeting. I find it it's very positive to stay in contact with this group. I have seen this all along as being the catalyst for whatever you want to call this decade that we're in, the aughts.
Uh-huh.
The aughts ought to be about non-vested rights in California. Mm-hmm. Just because you don't own property doesn't mean you should be brutally and viciously exploited. And it doesn't mean that elected officials should play duck and cover with such a very, very significant issue like housing.
Have any San Jose politicians spoken out on this issue?
No. Jim Beal showed up at the original forum in December, which I thought was kind of significant, really. Jim Beal is the chair of the Board of Supervisors for Santa Clara County. He at least showed up and waved from the back and made his presence known.
Uh-huh.
These issues remain highly charged, provocative. What I think is happening now, Robert, is a critical mass is being achieved. Everybody knows somebody that has had a rental problem. People are realizing that, but if you don't own property now, the likelihood is that you may never own property. And that because of that, it is appropriate and it's fitting that government rise to the occasion and regulate residential rent increases, which is what rent control is.
Mm-hmm.
Rent control says is that you're a tenant, you deserve stability. You deserve to know that your rent, where you live, your housing, is not going to be jacked up unreasonably just because the market will bear it. So where we're at now is I think we've passed the critical mass. I think that the emotionalism is peeling off, and we're left with dealing with these things rationally. My sense, too, is that the energy crisis is helping this issue. People are seeing what happens when you deregulate such a basic necessity. When you leave it purely to the so-called market, right, these market forces which don't really exist, what happens? Well, rates go through the roof. The state steps in and it becomes even more severe than it was in the past. What we're going to see now is the state purchasing power plants left and right.
And, of course, dumping all environmental control.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, and you've gotten any indications locally of any growing interest in rent control?
Yeah, I do, and I don't want to jump the gun too quick, but my sense is that the SEIU over the hill, Harry Adams, who's the political and community relations director, and others involved, deserve generous accolades for their courage and righteousness to come forth on this. They are providing the proper incubation and the ideal catalyst. The SEIU, I'll say this again, is an ideal catalyst for this movement. And I really see this.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. While we turn over the tape, you might consider giving us a call, letting us know what you think about rent control in Santa Cruz. Actually, I'm looking for rent reduction in Santa Cruz. Wouldn't that be nice? 427-3772.
So you say you see things developing at a level that hasn't happened for the last 20 years.
I think that what we did here in Santa Cruz was important in 1999. I don't want to deny that what was done was important, because it was. It was the first time that rent control was raised in quite a while anywhere, all right, in Santa Cruz in a couple of decades, statewide in maybe 10 years, all right. So it was significant in that way. We got about halfway to making it to ballot with a very, very difficult issue with minimal funding. All right, but it did open the, it was an opening salvo for all this. When I became aware of what was happening over the hill last summer, Joe Rodriguez, once again a reporter for the Merck, began to speak favorably about rent control. It seemed to me that, all right, this issue is coming to a new level. It's being addressed by people that would have shunned it even like a year ago. And lo and behold, we had a meeting. There was a meeting in December that drew upwards of 300 people. That's very significant. And each of these following meetings that have been organizing meetings have produced dramatic results and definite action plans. What I see coming out of the activity over the hill is the beginning of a new catalyst for a rent control movement. It's also drawing in people from previous rent control efforts. As I said, Randy Silverman from Berkeley, very knowledgeable, nice, polite guy. Bob Brownstein from San Jose, who was fundamental in the San Jose rent control ordinance which has existed since 79. So these guys are coming back into the fold getting involved in a new effort. So I think it's exciting times for tenants' rights. It's still an uphill battle because you're still dealing with politicians that are failing to address effectively tenants' rights issues.
Mm-hmm.
I know there are polite ways to say all this, but just because an issue is provocative, if you believe in it behind the scenes, come above board and say so, and watch what difference that makes. I think that it's great what the SDIU is doing. It's significant for our times. It's political courage is what we need.
Mm-hmm.
These kinds of issues, which are not 1,000 miles away or 500 miles away or the UN or stuff, they're right here in our own community, are generally speaking the most difficult. When you rock the boat in your own community, it's very difficult.
Now, what can people do who want to do a little of that boat rocking? Can they give you a call? Or
they can certainly give me a call. Anybody that wants to go over the hill on February 22nd with me, I'd be happy to give them a lift. My number is 466-0500. If you hang on a second, I'll give you the number for the tenants' rights folks over the hill.
Uh-huh.
And let me get it going here in a minute.
I think you told us Acorn's number is 729-9860. Is that right?
Yeah. Okay. Let me get
not 8860. I'm sorry. That's what it is. Got to read my own writing. It's area code 408 for those who want to call San Jose. 408-729-8860 for the Acorn organization. Is there another one too that you have?
Yeah. There's a number for the Tenants' Rights Association in San Jose, which I'm trying to, I know I've got it here, it's a question of locating. Okay, here we go. Tenants Rights Association, 408-280-2430. 408-280-2430. I think that what should happen in Santa Cruz is liaison with the groups over the hill.
Uh-huh.
in San Jose. A lot can be learned, a lot can be gained from tying this all together.
Maybe contact with the San Francisco group, too, and the Oakland group, huh?
Well, I think this is all going to come out of all this. I think what's happening in San Jose is a new birth of a very fundamental issue, which is the rights of non-vested citizens. I say this over and over again, Robert. A tenant garners no equity or appreciation benefits for what they pay for housing. You pay whatever it is. You pay a grand or $1,500 or whatever it is for your housing needs. You get nothing to show for that in the end.
Mm-hmm.
You're helping to pay, at least, like you said minimally, the property owner's mortgage. They get the equity. They get the appreciation. They get the homeowners. They get the mortgage interest deduction.
Mm-hmm.
All right? A tenant gets nothing. Now, that alone should be justification for rent control. Now, I'm very convinced about rent control. Rent control, simply explained, is regulating residential housing increases.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't really even be an issue, in my opinion. Not in California in 2001. It needs to be demystified, de-emotionalized, rationalized.
And passed.
And put into context and raised with honor. This is a righteous cause.
Oh, I think it's a very vital cause, and I think people are seeing it every month as they get their increased rent costs. So
I was asked last night if the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz is still enforced, in fact, by one of the participants.
Yeah, I talked to several people on the street last night after my show, and They had gotten tickets as recently as a week ago, and there's also a tickets have appeared in the courts. Usually when I go into court, I'll be going into court today, you get another ticket appearing on the court, usually because of a warrant, which means the ticket isn't $54, it's $272. So police are still giving out tickets. They say they only ticket on complaint or in certain high use areas, but of course that still means that hundreds and hundreds of people who have no legal place to sleep, possibly because of the failure to have rent control in this town in part, are facing, you know, criminalization and also, of course, violence and the risk of accidental injury because they can't sleep in groups in well-lighted areas and so forth because of the fact that it's all illegal in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, I don't think it's fantasy to observe that we're at a critical mass now with these kinds of issues where we can look out and witness the dissolution of the middle class. I'm 50 years old, okay? I have seen profound changes in the last 10 years here in the Bay Area. And to the point where I use the phrase refeudalization, is that what we're all about? Are we about having people who own property living in houses on hills and those that can't afford to own property living in squalor, being exploited, having no expectation of what their rents are ahead, and or they live in socialized welfare housing.
And in running the business, in doing low-income jobs for the businesses that cater to the people.
That's right. We have this fantasy with the phrase free enterprise. Now, I'm all for free enterprise, but let's put it in context. Somebody flips hamburgers at Jack's. All right, that ain't going to go away in the next 6 months or the next 6 years. And it's time that we address this. It's past time this issue was addressed. It is a disaster. It's a failure of political leadership. The reason why advocacy groups emerge, like what's happening over the hill, is the failure of political leadership. There would be no reason for a Tenants' Rights Association were it not that the leadership, the elected politicians, are not rising to the occasion. You got to ask, who's asleep at the switch? Who is bought and paid for? And what do they want? Is political elected leadership all about where's the bandwagon? Is that what it's about?
You know, it's interesting.
Polls are favorable, then I'm for it.
Uh-huh. Emperor Fitzmaurice, when he was approached by some of his subjects in December, actually some folks with the local Bay Area, what's it called? It's called the Bay Children's College, I believe. These two teachers took some kids in to talk to Tim Fitzmaurice, who is, of course, the mayor of Santa Cruz, but I call him the emperor because of his behavior at city council and shutting down debate around the sleeping ban and so forth. But they asked him about rent control, and his response was that he couldn't even talk about rent control because it would cause the landlords to raise the rents.
I gave a comment to that several weeks ago on your show, for which I will provide a partial apology.
Uh-huh.
All right. However, there has to be a way to say something about, you wanted to run for office, you're in office, you wanted to call the leader, well then, do it. If you're going to say that you stand for things behind the scenes, it is meaningless, and it is an expression of cowardice.
I know you've
become public.
You particularly ran into this problem when you were pressing for a rent control initiative or a rent stabilization initiative back in
99. Oh, it was the fundamental
barrier
and why we could not get the catalyst going. Okay.
I mean, you had a city council where not one council member offered to bring the issue up to put that initiative on the ballot, right?
No. Now, one has to give credit to Mike Rockin, in my opinion. Mike Rockin came out publicly for this.
But he wouldn't introduce it at city council.
No, he would not. But nonetheless, give credit where credit's due, Mike Rockin came out publicly from the start for it. He believed in it 20 years ago, he believes in it now.
Well, I don't understand if he favors it publicly, why he wouldn't raise the issue at city council.
I think it has to do with a political philosophy, which I don't agree with, which is that if it's not going to pass, you don't raise it.
Well, it seems to me that you know, it would expose as hypocrites the three you know, powerful incumbents, Sugar, Fitzmaurice, and Crone, if they voted against it, and if they voted, because I think that they would lose all their constituency if they voted against rent control.
You get no argument from me. I think it would have been the thing to do. You raise it above board,
uh-huh.
Raise it in the most significant way, which would have been to put it on the agenda. See where the chips fall.
Mm-hmm.
That's too bad that didn't happen. What is also too bad that didn't happen is that we did not get the above-board endorsements. And some of the comments that were made, you know, I'll put them in context and all that, but nonetheless, these comments were made as ways to explain why it's appropriate to agree with something behind the scenes but to not come above board. I find that very...
Didn't Christopher Crone say he didn't want to aberrate the process?
That was one of the more profound quotes.
Profound issues.
What is that saying? That's like Mayor Fitzmaurice saying that, I don't want to come above board until we have all of our ducks in a row, and otherwise we're going to excite the landlord community. Well, of course you're going to excite the landlord community. If they need an excuse to jack up the rents, besides the fact that they can just do it anyhow, they're going to blame whoever they can blame. Mm-hmm. What else is new?
Yeah, I guess, I mean, to be fair with Emperor Tim, what he said was not necessarily that he didn't support rent control, but that he didn't want to even mention it until it was, as you point, all ready to go so that the landlords, couldn't quickly raise the rents. Of course, they could quickly raise the rents anyway. I mean, I don't see what that, you know.
Yes, I'll put this out to the mayor. What are you doing then, now, to raise rent control to that point? If you, as you claim, agree with it in principle, what are you doing to organize to get it to the point where you're going to come public?
Well, it's interesting that they did do this thing with 204 Riverside. They sent in their inspectors in this all Spanish speaking apartment where the guy had raised the rents prohibitively in the last year. I guess that's the Rodriguez property. Of course, they could have dealt with it by buying the property, which instead of going after the Dolphin and the Lee, which they're still playing around with and apparently evicting lots of. It's hard to tell if they're evicting people, but there seems to be a great drop-off in the number of people with Dolphin that were previously there. You consider past estimates of numbers of people in the Dolphin. But they had they have talked about protecting the rights of these tenants, and they've kind of had the people closely associated with the city, like Tony Madrigal, have come in and, arranged these tenants with legitimate and heartbreaking stories about how their rents have been raised 50 to 100% in the last year. Maybe even the last couple of months raised huge amounts, and the city sent in building inspectors and then did a, has essentially told the landlord that they can't raise the rents until they meet these inspections, and they're putting pressure on this particular landlord. But of course, viewing this, though I applaud these tenants for organizing and bringing up the issue, unless it's as one example of many people, it's simply a sort of a special interest group, and I don't want to see it be that. And I think that your effort over the Hill and Donna Dice's work around eviction prevention and the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz is really key here, and I do appreciate your keeping us abreast of this. Is there more you want to tell us on this issue? We're talking to Bob LaMonica, a rent control activist who just returned from a very encouraging meeting with, I guess it's called the Tenants' Rights Association, or what's the
Tenants'
called?
Rights Association of Santa Clara County.
Uh-huh.
408-280-2430. Next meeting is February 22nd, 6:30, SEIU 715 Union Hall on North First Street.
And what's the address on North First Street?
2960 North First Street.
And, Bob, you can give more information to these folks. I guess you're at 466-0500?
Yes. Let me say this in conclusion. There is nothing remotely dishonorable with being a tenant. Tenants have earned, Americans have earned the right to be non-vested, which means you don't own property, and be citizens. Now, what should follow that very logically, your tenant, you have the right to be protected from rent gouging. Plain and simple.
Yeah.
Rent control is past being provocative. It should have happened a long time ago. Something happened. Somebody, in my opinion now, somebody was asleep at the wheel, or a lot of people were bought and paid for. Now, maybe there's a more polite way to say that. But when you have elderly people being booted out because their rent was jacked up 50%, 100%, having to live on the couch of their daughter. Something is fundamentally wrong.
You're here.
Now, no one is trying to deny profits to property owners. What they're saying is that there's a human context for housing that cannot be denied. Cannot be denied. If we deny the human context for housing, we're heading toward a two-tiered economy that is going to be brutal and vicious. Somebody flips hamburgers at Jack's. no matter how many monster houses are built on the west side.
Right. I agree with you, and I'm hoping that folks outside will give you a call at 466-0500 and volunteer to do what's necessary to reactivate this movement in Santa Cruz, because I know
absolutely
it's pretty much a, you know, your effort before was understaffed and underfunded. Maybe if we had a decently staffed and funded movement, it would really take off, particularly with this work over the hill.
I think the indications are there that it may.
Cool.
You bet, Robert. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Bob LaMonica.
And that was Bob LaMonica in a lengthy discussion of rent control and his efforts in San Jose to get them going, so maybe we can get going. We turn now to Santa Cruz, and on the line with me is advocate, mom, and bilingual dynamo, Rose, is it Toyofa?
No, Tafoya.
Tafoya, ooh. Rose Tafoya, thank you very much. Hi, Rose.
Hi.
And Rose, of course, you are a person in your own right, of course, but also you are the mom of a number of children, and you've brought them up a certain way, right?
Basically, I've brought them up to, you know, not to take things at face value, to question things when they think that something is wrong, and basically to know that they have rights.
Well, I guess that became the question as we read this week's Metro. We saw your daughter's name in the Metro story.
Oops, sorry about that.
Wow.
I'm outside the apartment because the kids are making too much noise.
Oh, that's okay.
The cars are going by.
No problem. You learned, when did you learn that your daughter had been arrested for being in a park after dark?
Oh, she told me that following morning what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
And first thing I did was questioned her, you know, as far as what she had done. And as I said, I've always taught my kids to question authority. I've always taught them to, you know, stand up for their rights. And my daughter is 18, but she's articulate and she's very bright. And she wrote everything down and went to court recently, tried to get the ticket reversed. They gave her a ticket for being in the park after hours. First of all, it's not a park. It's a basketball court. She was not on the basketball court. She was on the sidewalk.
This is the Beach Flats strip of concrete between Uden and...
correct.
And the Riverside.
It's more of a recreational area, you know, where the kids play basketball.
It's
things,
next to the community trailer, between the community trailer and the basketball court.
Correct. There's no grass, there's no benches, there's no playground for the kids to play in. So, you know, I kind of am curious as to what their definition of a park is.
Well, I think their definition was three people of color walking around, or maybe at least, I guess she had a female friend with her and a male friend. They were walking around 12:15 at night.
Correct.
One August evening last year.
Correct.
And
they were on their way home from a party.
On their way home from a party, they weren't staggered.
Something wrong, which is the perception that they like to give. And I'm not saying that all the officers, you know, in the community are bad. I'm just saying that there are some officers that I do believe use excessive force. My daughter's 5'1". Maybe on a good rainy day, she weighs about 110 pounds. They threw her to the ground. They handcuffed her.
Did they have a gun out? I heard
they
something.
They had a gun out. They put the dogs on her.
They had a canine unit?
Canine unit. The dogs were literally at her head. And when they wanted to search her, she asked for a female officer, and their answer to that was to throw her into the back of a squad car and tell her that she was talking too effing much.
Too fucking much, we say here on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay, you got it.
Mm-hmm.
Too fucking much.
Right.
And like I said, I don't understand the reasoning behind it, you know, as far as the amount that they went through with all of this. And what I did not like is that there was two officers involved, and yet those two officers called another officer in that wasn't even there and had him sign the citation, which to me points as a cover-up to prove that they weren't there.
Now, we're talking about Sergeants Vogel and Clark, according to the interview I did with your daughter last week, and I believe according to the Metro Santa Cruz story that came out yesterday.
Excuse me?
Is that accurate, or?
Yes, it is.
So I'm sorry, I just wanted to clarify that. And by the way, if there are any police officers listening who feel that, frankly, I like Sergeant Vogel personally, and if he or one of his advocates wishes to call in and answer or address any of these concerns, I would be more than happy to hear this. As I said about Sergeant Clark last week, this is not a one-sided show. We believe in airing all sides, so feel free, listeners, after we've spoken with Rose here, to give a call at 427-3772. But we're going to be talking to you for a bit, Rose. And you weren't at this, you weren't with your daughter at this time.
No, I was not.
You got the story from her.
I got the story from her.
Did you talk to any of her companions?
Yes, I did. Oh. And their stories were corroborated, you know, with Christina's. Mm-hmm. The problem that I stated was that I didn't feel that the officer that signed the citation, who actually showed up in court with Christina, should have even been involved in it at all.
Because as I understand, he was beckoned over by the two sergeants
over.
Who didn't want to give their names in order to, should we say, take the rap.
Mm-hmm. And like I said, I raised my children to, you know, ask questions. Christina had the foresight to turn the citation over and write down the badge numbers of the officers that were there.
Mm-hmm.
And I never throw anything away, thank God, and she'd given it to me to hold for her, so we do have that.
Now, how did you know it was Vogel and Clark because of what she said? They wouldn't give their names, one of her claims, right?
Correct.
Would they give their badge numbers?
She was able to get three badge numbers.
But they didn't give them to her verbally?
No. Mm-hmm. No, they did not want to give her their badge numbers.
Now, did she determine from those badge numbers that these were the officers involved, or did she hear people addressing each other by name?
No, she knows Officer Vogel and Officer Clark.
Sergeants Vogel and Clark?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I do want to point out, you know, that my children are not angels. And, you know, and I do understand that being a police officer is probably a very difficult job. And there are times when, yes, maybe they might be in danger. I do not see how a 5'1", 110-pound female, 18 years old, can present a danger to them to the point where they would have to draw their guns, stick the police dogs on her, and handcuff her and throw her into the back of a police car.
And then give her the very serious ticket of being in a park after dark.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Now, according to her, they were claiming that there had been a fight at a party and that somehow she matched the description. Did they give a description of the people who were fighting?
No, but then they never do. It's the same adage of, you know, you're walking down the street and, oh, we just heard somebody robbed a liquor store and you look like that person. I mean, let's get real here, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It was three juveniles, you know, out. And, you know, if they were doing anything bad, I could see it, but they were just on their way home.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the last week, you know, has your daughter suffered any repercussions? Has she been given any, I mean, have the police contacted her again about this incident? Has there been any complication as a consequence of, well, I should say the radio broadcast and the story that appeared yesterday in the Metro?
I haven't heard directly from her that there has been, but I have warned her that she needs to basically watch her P's and Q's at this point, because I'm sure that there are going to be some repercussions from this, and if anything I've learned from being here in 12 years, anything that I've learned from being here 12 years is the fact that there will probably be some type of repercussion from all of this, and she's aware of it. But the other thing that I've taught my kids is not to be afraid. And so,
or if you be afraid, you swallow it down, you keep on going, I guess.
That's correct, because there's a lot of things that need to be changed sometimes in this world, and I just don't want my kids to think that they have to lie down and take things,
mm-hmm.
especially something like this. And that's part of the reason why Christina went to court and stood up for herself, because a lot of times people think, well, I'll just pay the ticket and that's the end of that.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that shouldn't happen. And I was really saddened to hear about the Citizens Police Review Board kind of phasing itself out here. I think that, unfortunately, I wish they would have been able to stay up, you know, longer, and I thought that they should have changed some of the things in it.
Well, they are. Actually, they're still going, but they aren't doing anything. That's their problem.
That's the problem.
And they never were, is the problem.
Yeah.
They've always been kind of a cover,
mm-hmm.
duck and cover story for the police, even when there have been a board member or two that have wanted to do something. At least that's been my perspective. You've been in the community for 12 years. You've been a mom. How many kids have you got?
Well, I have three children, but I have probably about 40 kids that have literally, I've watched them from 6 years of age on up, that are now young adults that all call me mom.
Wow.
So I worked in the community with these kids for a long time, and I've seen a lot of things happen to them, and I just feel that they need someone to advocate for their rights.
How do police...
Hey, Mom!
I hear one of them there,
yeah.
Man. How do police treat your extended family generally? Do you have a general description in the Beach Flats? Are they discriminatory? Is there a problem of racism in the Beach Flats?
Well, I think it's like with most things, especially like in a low-income, I wouldn't exactly say poverty area, because we're talking Santa Cruz here.
Mm-hmm.
But they see these kids. They've, you know, seen them grow up. Some of them gotten involved in drugs. Some of them gotten involved with gangs and stuff. They do single them out.
Mm-hmm.
They single them out. I mean, I've got kids that have just gotten out on parole and are trying to find jobs or stuff and trying to find housing, and none of that is available to them. They don't have anywhere to go. They don't have anybody to ask questions. And then they walk downtown and they're stopped.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing here? Why are you here? Are you on parole? Let me see your papers. Do you have any ID? You know, and you don't see that happening. I'm sorry, but you don't see that happening to a lot of white kids walking downtown that may have had the same problems.
But
and
clearly, you're sort of the mother who heads a large gang. This is all gang-related, right?
Well, you know, now that's another thing, too. I don't know if I would really want to say a gang, because then again, you're stereotyping these kids. I mean, they talk about children being a product of their environment. My son's 21 years old. He grew up in the flats. He's in his third year at Cabrillo. He starts San Francisco State in September. He's never gangbanged. He's never sold drugs. He's never used drugs. You know, so, you know, I can't see how he could be a product of this environment. He rose above it, and there's a lot of kids here that do rise above it, and I just think that they're not being given a fair chance. And I, like I said, I do want to repeat this. I do believe that there are some good officers out there, but there's other officers out there that I believe think that they are above the law.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the officer that told my daughter that she talked too fucking much, I don't think that was right. I think that, you know, they have to take some consequences for their actions as well, because you cannot tell a young adult that they're doing something wrong when you yourself are doing something wrong.
Now you're also not just a mom who kind of adopted a large family of children, so to speak.
I come from a large family. I come from a family of 10.
Huh. And where were you brought up?
I was brought up in Northern California, in a little place called Stockton.
Ah, not so little anymore.
Not so little anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, when we moved there, we were the first Hispanic family north of the Calaveras Bridge. Whoops, there goes the neighborhood.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, so, I mean, and when my mother first came to California, she didn't speak any English, and she was put into classes for mentally retarded children, so she didn't want to teach us how to speak Spanish. I had to learn how to speak Spanish when I was a young adult.
And you're now bilingual.
Yes, I am.
And you've acted as a liaison for folks in the jail. You've had,
yes.
And you have a sense of how does the jail treat people who are Spanish speaking and how, young people. Any comments on that?
Well, I think that there are other things besides incarceration that, you know, there's a lot of people, especially like in this area, that don't realize that there are programs, there are other ways that you can get out of things, you know, other than incarceration. I think that when they just send a child, you know, 3 years into prison, all they're doing is making them become better criminals. I think that they need to look at other ways to try and figure out what's wrong with the problem here. You know, there's got to be another way of going about it. And I think a lot of these kids, and especially the ones that are getting out on parole now, there's no places to live. There's no place that they can afford to rent. They grew up in this community. What do you want them to do? They can't get a job. You know, it's really, really hard for them. And there, a lot of them are out there, and a lot of them are trying. And there's just not enough people to help them.
Mm-hmm. And you were working officially with Youth Services for a while.
Yes, uh-huh.
And got a lot of experience that way.
Yes, I did. And that's how I was able to find out about a lot of the programs that are out there and a lot of help that these kids can get.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know how many times a parent would tell me, oh, my God, I didn't know that they had some type of agency like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a legal aid society, especially for teens. You know, there's a runaway hotline. There's so many things that are out there, and the kids just aren't even aware of half of what is there for them.
Maybe the police officers should start informing people about these services.
Well, you know, I do know that when they go through their training and stuff, there are different nonprofit agencies that they're supposed to visit. Because that was part of, I was like a liaison between the police department and some of our programs. And I do know that they're supposed to go out there and check out these nonprofit agencies and use them as a referral or someplace that they can, you know, have some feedback, and so it's not like they don't know.
Mm-hmm. What about other people in the community who are Spanish speaking? Do you find that folks support each other, or are they kind of afraid to?
They're intimidated. A lot of them are very much intimidated. Huh. There's a lot of people that will literally lay down and take whatever is given to them because they don't know of any other way. And that angers me, being a Latina. It angers me as being an educated woman that a lot of these people will allow this to happen to them without questioning and without thinking that they have a right.
Is there anything in the past 12 years, I'm not just trying to dig up dirt on mm-hmm. the police department, but if you were to to give some typical examples of how you've seen the police in operation in the Beach Flats, you mentioned before that there was an officer you really liked a lot, a fellow named
Pac-Man.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what his original name was, although perhaps
either,
we can get a caller who does. But,
He was very well liked by the kids in the community. He was very well liked by the parents. He took that little extra time to give of himself, mm-hmm. and especially in a community that's so small. I mean, when I first came here to the Beach Flats and they said this was, the gang and drug activity of the, whole Santa Cruz, I laughed because in Stockton, this would be a joke, mm-hmm. And one thing with Pac-Man is that he did take the time. He did take the time to come out and talk to the parents. And like I said, there are some officers now that will do that, mm-hmm. but there are the few bad ones that just make it really look bad for the rest of the force.
What have you seen in the last year or two? Any particular incidents you want to bring to our attention?
As far as
police contact with either young people or just people in the Beach Flats that prompted your interest.
Well, I think that it hasn't just been in the past year. I think it's been evolving for some time now. Mm-hmm. I just feel that it's wrong that they single out a lot of the Latinos in this area. It's like
have you seen that happen?
Oh, I've seen it happen a lot of times.
Give me an example.
Well,
other than of course Christina.
Well, actually, a lot of it would have to do with her sometimes too. But I mean, it's just the excessive force. Sometimes I've seen where they've throw them to the ground. I had this other young girl that I was helping with, and they gave her a ticket for resisting arrest.
That's what they threatened your daughter with, too, as I understand.
They gave her a ticket for resisting arrest. She's not even 5 feet tall. She probably weighs about 95 pounds.
And this is another woman, not Christina.
This is another person, mm-hmm. not Christina, and she was pregnant, which unfortunately she lost the baby after the incident. They threw her to the ground. They handcuffed her. I went to court with her, and she was so afraid she could not even speak. She had to write a statement out to be read by the public defender to the judge.
Was she convicted?
They dismissed all the charges.
And what was the name of the officer involved in this case?
I don't remember the name of the officer involved. I couldn't tell you offhand.
If you know the victim's name, you can call me off air, and we can mm-hmm. find out who the officer was. Was it one officer or more than one?
No, it was more than one officer. And
how long ago was this?
This was just recently. We just went to court probably maybe a month or two ago.
SCPD or deputies?
No,
or
SCPD. And it was also down here in the flats.
Were you a witness or did you hear about this?
I was not
this?
A witness. She came to me and asked me if I would help her because she was afraid. Mm-hmm. And then I started doing some research on it, and I went to court with her and basically advocated for her, contacted the public defender's office, let them know what was going on. When we got to court, the judge just looked at her and he turned around and asked the district attorney, he said, "Are you going to explain this to me?" And she said, "Well, Your Honor, the officer was felt threatened." And then he looked at her and he goes, "Case dismissed."
Do you know the name of the judge?
He's not there anymore.
Perhaps Judge Kelsey?
No, I know he just retired. It must have been around in December, because I know December was last month he was here.
Could have been Judge Kelsey, because he just retired. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it would be good to bring this case forward. You see, I think the best way to protect people like Christina and this woman who's very afraid mm-hmm. is for them all to step forward together, mm-hmm. along with some strong voices in the Hispanic community. And I don't mean the kept voices that the city council buys and pays for in the Beach Flats to do their redevelopment work either, frankly. I mean, I want to throw in that particular concern I have. I don't know if you've been following the Dolphin Lee affair.
Yes. Well, I used to live right across the street. history from the Dolphin. So
you want to talk a little bit about that?
Oh my gosh, that was just, I mean, well, that would be like another show, because we're talking housing and then we don't want to get involved in that.
Uh-huh. Well, I'd like to talk to you about that another time. But I know that, I think that if you could come forward with a number of people concerned about this issue, maybe even hold a press conference, give the police an opportunity to respond.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I have nothing against the Santa Cruz Police Department mm-hmm. at all. I mean, like I said, there are some good officers out there, and a lot of them that I know that in the community. But I'm just saying that there are some that do act and
intimidating
like
ways.
Different ways, correct. And I think that it's an abuse of power, and I think that they need to, I'm not saying necessarily be reprimanded, but they need to, like, maybe get some additional training.
Well, that's
not to be
that's very nice. I mean, that's you're being very gentle with them. I think when somebody repeatedly abuses his authority,
you do with vinegar, so.
Right. Well, if you're trying to catch flies, that's a good approach.
That's correct too.
I would like to see the police department. One of the best ways to deal with really bad officers is to get rid of them, and also let the other jurisdictions know just why they have been fired, and let the communities mm-hmm. know that as well. Because what they do with bad officers is they just,
circulate them.
They wander right to another community. And then they shoot somebody down in Seaside on the rooftop, as they did with this fellow a year ago, or actually 2 years ago, mentally,
the one that was...
Charles, what the heck was his name? Charles something Jr. Uh-huh. He escapes uh-huh. my memory right now, but, that was a cop that originally came from... I think it was a cop that was actually in Santa Cruz 20 years ago.
Uh-huh.
It might have been part of the Code Blue thing where they were beating up homeless people, and six cops were
correct.
Tried and uh-huh. acquitted, but I think a number of them left the force.
Uh-huh.
Again, I'm not too clear on the details of which cops those were. We need, I think, real police oversight. And frankly, the police oversight we have is people like you who are trying to stand up for people in court. That's nothing to do with these clowns on the police review board
mm-hmm.
who, go in there, warm their chairs once a month, overlook the police files and say, oh, yeah, okay, or we disagree, but we're not going to do anything about it.
Correct. But see, they don't want somebody like me on that.
well, some of us would. We're not going to get you on that board, though, for the same reason we won't get me on that board,
correct.
Is because they don't want militant, strong voices.
Now, I have a real problem with the activist label, so I think I'd rather stay as an advocate.
Okay, even you mellow advocates. I don't think they want the mellow mama advocates like yourself. I think they want people that are going to be kind of soft-spoken and quiet and bureaucratic, and that's the people they've got. But on the other hand, the community can force them to hold public hearings. And that's, for example, if you bring Christina's case and this other woman's case to the police review board, or even just have a press conference about it and demand direct city council action. Say, mm-hmm. police review board is not holding any public hearings, so we don't want to go through them. We want to go directly to the community. And if the city council doesn't want to act, then we'll just do a lawsuit, find a volunteer lawyer, and sue the police department in the city for damages on this issue, and try to make it a basis for organizing in the community. Have there been anybody, other people who have been abused? Let's find out, how many others?
I would guarantee you there's a lot.
Well, I think that's what we need to know. And when those people are not afraid to come forward, when other people, when they hear this happening outside their houses, come out of their houses and stand around and watch, that's when the police will start backing off. That's what I believe is going to happen.
Either that, or they'll find some reason to throw me in jail.
Everybody, yeah. Well, they can't throw the entire town in jail. At least that's the theory. But you're right. That's another possibility, and that's always a risk. And that's why.
Well, life is a risk.
Yes. Well, I think it's very brave of you, frankly, to come on this kind of a show. I am not the police department's. I'm not the police chief's best friend. I feel Belcher needed to be fired years ago. We need real community control of police and some significant, really top-down and bottom-up changes. But let me shut up about myself. Tell me some more about issues that you were talking to me about before we went on the air. You talked about a number of different issues that concerned you in the community. I don't know if I've covered all of them. Do you want to talk about housing at all? Or?
Well, I think that the housing situation is horrendous right now.
Mm-hmm.
Again, going back to my daughter, she's living in a hotel room that's costing her $400 a week. Why? Mm-hmm. Because she's 18 years old, and she's a single parent. She has a 3-year-old daughter, and of course she doesn't have any credit history. She's only 18. you know, and I think it's horrendous that she has to pay so much money to live in a hotel room. That's not, you know, the best place to live in, let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the housing situation is horrendous in Santa Cruz. It
mm-hmm.
is. I'm not just talking for my daughter, but I'm talking to college kids. I worked at several hotels in the area over the past 12 years since I've been here, because when I came here, I had to take 3 jobs. I couldn't afford the rent,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think it's pretty sad that you have to work so hard to live someplace just so your kids can be safe. I came from a community where, you know, we had, 76 murders in 1 year, and that was nothing, you know, and I didn't want to raise my kids in a community where I had wrought iron bars in my doors and windows, and I wouldn't let my kids ride their bicycles outside because I was afraid there would be a drive-by,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that was the reason I came here to Santa Cruz, was because I thought it was a pretty liberal community, and I wanted to raise my kids basically the way I was raised.
Well, there's some who say that the police play this game with the drug trade, that they, you know, they pull the cops away from the scene in order to give the impression that the neighborhood is deteriorating.
Correct.
Again, then they can get more police funding, and they can also push through projects like the Dolphin Lee that some favorite members of the city council want.
Okay, if you want to go there, we'll talk about that other thing, too, about this thing where they've had the last 6 months with the federal agents working with the Santa Cruz Police Department.
Talk about that.
Okay, I'm familiar with at least 5 cases right now that are in court, and I've been advocating with them. One case in particular, a young man was arrested along with his mother, and it's a travesty of justice because of the fact that every time they've gone to court, it's been something else and something else, and I have a feeling, and probably I hope I don't jeopardize it, but I have a feeling it's going to end up being dropped because they don't have anything on him.
He was arrested originally for heroin use or something?
No,
or?
For selling, but neither one of them actually sold.
Uh-huh.
And the person that did sell, they don't even know his name, and he wasn't arrested.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's kind of like they were jumping the gun because they were all gun-ho to get it in there that they made all these arrests.
Greg, I've heard the same thing about other people, too.
I would wonder mm-hmm. now, you know, I would like the Sentinel to print down, out of all those people that were arrested, how many of those cases have actually gone to trial, how many cases have been dismissed
mm-hmm.
because of lack of evidence or because of evidence that was
illegally obtained.
Illegally obtained, correct.
Mm-hmm. It'll be a cold day in hell before Daryl Cole, the Sentinel writer, ever does such a thing. But
well,
I think we need to do that. That's the kind of research that the community needs to put forward.
I think it's the research that's going to open a lot of eyes when they find out that a lot of these cases aren't even making it. And I do know that on some of these cases I've been to, there's been at least 5 officers in court, another intimidation tactic, you know, that are like trying to scare the people that were arrested into thinking that, oh my God, you know, I'm going to go to jail or something.
So these are 5 police officers who don't testify but just sit there?
They just sit there.
This is interesting because...
Believe me, going to... I'm in court at least 3 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be surprised.
You know, I'd love to have you do a weekly report on what you've seen in court if you wanted to call in and do a 5 or 10 minute update every week.
Mm-hmm.
Give us the kind of the high points and the low points. I mean, for example, let's pretend you were going to do that for this last week. How would you describe your week?
My last week, I was in court 3 times last week.
And what did you learn?
Well, one of the cases that I think is probably going to end up getting dismissed, I learned that the evidence they had, part of it was inadmissible, and the other part of it is questionable because the people that were supposed to be on tape were not. There was a lot of things that were wrong with it. Another one I know of, another young woman that... unfortunately made a bad choice of who she was going to party with afterwards, you know, and they wanted to give her 90 days. And she's a young mother, she's a young daughter, and they wanted to keep her incarcerated. She was going to lose her apartment, she was going to lose her job.
Probably lose her child, too.
She was probably going to lose her, too. And I went out and I was able to obtain 6 letters of support for her. And I worked with her mother, and I worked with the public defender office as far as, you know, trying to get her out. And they did release her after I was told repeatedly by various people in the community that it could not be done.
Don't try it. Go home. Shut up.
That's exactly
Lock
right.
your door.
And
be afraid.
One thing that, I'm sorry, mm-hmm. maybe that people won't like me for that, but I know that you're not supposed to do that.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a way that you can work with the system, then do it. but don't lay down and just take it at face value. And even when I had talked to her when she was in jail, she said, oh, I just know I'm not going to get out. And I said, yes, you will. And she did. And you know, I think that they need to, like, look into that a little bit better than just giving somebody 90 days. I don't think that's the solution.
This was for what, heroin use or heroin sales or?
No, actually, it was for use, but not heroin, and it was another type of, you know,
cocaine or crack.
Right, uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And she'd been on probation for 3 years, was ready to get off in March, mm-hmm. next month. And it was the first time she ever had any incidents in 3 years, and they wanted to, like, just throw away and lock her up. And
now, is this drug use pure and simple? Are we talking about, you know, she ran rampant and started breaking windows and killing people?
No, nothing at all. She was
doing what other people do, let's say, with alcohol or cigarettes, she was going to be separated from her child, lose her house, become a public charge in jail, mm-hmm. and become a criminal mm-hmm. because of recreational drug use.
Correct.
Right. I just want to make sure I have that clear. It wasn't for some...
It's not even recreational. I would more pointedly say it was an isolated incident and one that she truly regrets. She's extremely remorseful about, realizes everything she could have lost,
mm-hmm.
Is, you know, working really hard to change this and turn it around into a positive thing. But, you know, like I said, there were so many people that told us that there was no hope, that there was no way she was going to get out of this. It wasn't a matter of getting her out of it. It was a way of trying to help her
mm-hmm.
to go on with her life and take the consequence for what she did, but without incarcerating her.
We're talking to Rose Tafoya on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. We will soon be taking calls at 427-3772. Rose, do you feel that, I mean, you're certainly not, you sound like a one-woman dynamo, but if people want to reach you, I don't want you to have to give a number out on the air, but I would encourage people, if they have some, particularly who live in the Beach Flats area. Are you still living there in the Beach Flats?
I don't live in the Beach Flats anymore, but I'm, like I said, a lot of these kids mm-hmm. I have watched grow up over the years, and I've been very, very intimately involved with their families. And as I said, I'm kind of like the, I don't want to say a jailhouse lawyer, but I'm kind of like the advocate for a lot of them. So I am down here, well, probably about 5 days a week.
Well, if people want to get a hold of Rose, you can give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Again, 423-4833, and I will pass the numbers of whoever calls in on to you, Rose, so you can get back to them if you'd like, unless you want to give out your number directly. We can do it that way.
I'll work through you, because,
okay.
Like I said, I don't even know how I have time half the time to do what I do, but...
Maybe you need some help. Maybe you need some people volunteering to...
I would be more than glad if there's somebody else out there that's willing to help these kids and that believes that, you know, everybody deserves a chance. I'd be more than glad to work with anybody in the community.
Okay. I really appreciate your taking the risk of going public with your relatively moderate but, you know, clear opinions and the, you know, the cases that you know of where you feel that there have been mistakes made by the police department that need to be corrected, it sounds like,
mm-hmm.
or made by the courts or made by the jails. And mistakes are made, and unless we acknowledge that those mistakes are made and deal with them, they fester and they become the basis for worse mistakes. So, I mean, as we see in L.A. with the massive scandal and violence around the Rampart scandal down there, I want to thank you for being on the show. Is there more you'd like to say before we check out what the audience thinks of what you're saying?
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you for letting me say my little piece. I hope it's going to make a little difference, if not a lot of difference. That'd be great.
And you are invited to call in every week to give an update if you feel that there's anything you've learned that the community can learn from.
Okay. You're on.
Hey.
You probably get tired of hearing from me.
Never. Thank you very much.
All right, then.
Bye-bye.
Bye. The more they need, the more.
ever said I never should turn out to be anything good. Everything I did, she'd say, bad, bad girl to disobey. You'll get in trouble, wait and see. Don't you come running home to me. Father said that if I did, he'd knock my head with the teapot lid. Oh, school was dumb and the teacher mean. Along came a man in a limousine. I jumped inside, was off in a crack. Tell my mother I'll never come back. Tell my mother I'll never come back. Oh, tell everybody. Dime store ring. I won't give my baby away. With my baby alone I'll stay. Never ever will I say you are bad to disobey. Oh baby, don't you be mad at me. We'll have good times, wait and see. I'll be your mama, I'll be your dad. We'll laugh and smile, we won't be sad. We'll laugh and smile.
That was a cut from Inner City, also known as Street Dreams, one of the best musicals of all time, for my money, from the 70s and 80s. Originally came out in the 70s as Inner City, and in the 80s reissued as Street Dreams. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Phone lines are open if you want to call in and comment. I think we have a working phone line. I hope we do. 427-3772. Talking a lot about police abuse. In this case, the case of Christina Tafoya. We just spoke to her mother, Rose Tafoya. Christina was the subject of both an interview on Free Radio a week ago, and actually it may have even been on Sunday. I think it was more recent than a week ago. Anyway, it was a recent show, and also an article in the Metro. And that's... Hey, we get some more articles like that, we might actually start to read the Metro regularly, and it would be amazing. What else has been happening? Well, one subject we've been covering in some detail on the air is the sleeping ban law that criminalizes homeless people outside at night. And that law may be coming up for an analysis and some limited public discussion on February 27th at the Tuesday council meeting, last council meeting of the month at City Hall in the evening, directly after oral communications. I haven't got all the specifics on it, and the agenda is not actually made up until next Wednesday, so it won't be final until then, but that's the inner scuttlebutt, the sort of back door... behind the scenes smoked room sort of thing that's coming to us, partially because, as I understand it, a group of mainstream advocates have been circulating a letter to the city council seeking to get some fast, strong, and constructive response to the reality that 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people face criminalization under the sleeping ban. And of those, there are hundreds of them that are out there even every night as we speak. I would say probably more than 1,000. And it's a real issue, of course, one which has shamed the city for decades since 1978 when the sleeping ban law was passed. And it needs to be changed. And, of course, City Council has been refusing to do that. I spoke to City Council on Tuesday myself about some issues around the sleeping ban and around, well, when you try to bring the sleeping ban and other issues of low income concern, rent control, don't sell out the Dolphin lead tenants, things of this sort, to the city council, you find yourself first ignored and then censored and shut down. This is what happened with David Silva. Now, you may remember David Silva. He is a man who orchestrated a whole series of fasts last year, as well as two initiatives to end the sleeping ban, which garnered thousands of signatures. He was actually called into the mayor's kind of chambers and began working with the mayor and a select committee that included Ken Cole, Michael Schmidt, Emily Riley to set up safe sleeping zones as a consequence of both his protests and, I would also modestly say, the protests done by HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the organization I work with. We did the famous Pie and the Pusser protest. We tabled on the street for many weeks James Ney, the famous chalk on the sidewalk, go to jail activist, whose lawsuit on that is coming up soon, was part of that effort. And Silva was dragged off to the psych ward on June 13th. And here's a speech I made. I wasn't able to give the whole speech, but he is suing the city, and before you sue the city, you put in a claim for money. He did that, and the city council heard his claim and denied it, and this is what I told the council about it, as well as some remarks I didn't have time to make. It's called Silencing Silva with a Psychiatric Arrest. On June 13th, David Silva was assaulted by police and hauled away in a psychiatric 5150, which the Dominican psych ward doctors themselves dismissed as frivolous. 5150 is the code section that allows psychiatrists, or I should say police, to take you into custody either as a danger to yourself, a danger to others, or gravely disabled, and hold you for 72 hours for observation in a psych ward. This arrest has particular significance for those of us concerned with restoring democratic process at City Council. Silva was a homeless advocate abducted in the midst of the safe sleeping zones controversy. He was the chair of the SCAN Housing and Homelessness Committee. SCAN, the Santa Cruz Action Network, is the powerful organization that has successfully elected 5 of the 7 sitting council members. Silva created the powerful May 31st SCAN resolution, the subject of council discussion as he was being dragged off. Silva's resolution asked for guarantees of no evictions from the Dolphin and Lee apartments. Silva's resolution prompted racist remarks from Councilmember Sugar, which suggested tenants were living in squalid, filthy conditions packed in like sardines and could go do that in Mexico. Again, the whole basis of the Dolphin Lee controversy centered around accepting a prefabricated project by Mercy Charities Housing, which was backed by the City Council and is backed by the City Council, which will create less housing than it destroys and which will result in about half the people who are currently living or were currently living in that area in those apartments, the Dolphin apartments, the Lee apartments, and the Rex Court apartments, being essentially evicted, sent into the night. All, of course, for low-income and affordable housing and because they want to help Hispanic people. Thank you very much. As Silva was moved to the podium to explain, he was arrested, apparently on prior order from then-Mayor Sugar. This arrest terrified many Spanish-speaking tenants of the Dolphin and Lee apartments who were in the audience for the first time. Many Spanish-speaking residents, some of them no doubt illegals, mastered their fear and were waiting to speak at a microphone in what would be a very uncomfortable session for City Council, which had rushed the Dolphin Lee project in closed session, ignoring the input from people in the Dolphin and Lee apartments. In the week before the council meeting when he was arrested, Silva was also struggling with another issue, to save the homeless safe sleeping zones proposal from a premature burial by a combination of police misdirection, media misinformation, and corporate email smears. It became clear that the prior council, even those who had represented themselves as allies like Mayor Sugar and Vice Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice, were not going to put the sleeping ban, the safe sleeping zones, or the blanket ban on the agenda in a timely manner, or move porta-potties and dumpsters into the zones, or challenge the lies being spread about the safe zones by the media and by certain members of the city council and by some of the neighbors and businesses and by the police department. David Silva despaired. He suggested the council might not listen to anything but someone burning themselves up in front of their eyes. The day after this desperate statement, Silva met with the mayor and apologized for the image. On the day before the council meeting, he had friendly dialogues with police for some time before the afternoon council started. Prior to his arrest, he was not warned, cautioned, or searched. He walked freely behind the council dais, where the press table used to be, and met Heather Berner, the Sentinel reporter. He chatted with Sergeant Hennig, who is now the sergeant-at-arms at the city council. It was only when Nina Ruiz, Residentes Unidos organizer for the Dolphin and Lee Tenants, another critic of the council, and a leader of the Spanish-speaking people in the audience, approached the microphone that police, on prearranged signal, acted. David Silva was beckoned outside by a police officer, handcuffed, and then dragged off, followed by a crowd of 50 people who had previously been in council chambers. What was he dragged off for? Well, the claim was that they thought he was psychiatrically unbalanced and was about to burn himself up in front of the city council. The man didn't even have a pack of matches on him. He'd allowed him to be wandering around the council chambers without any problem. He'd apologized for this dramatic image, which is in many quarters considered legitimate political protest, certainly of a very extreme sort, such as happened with the Buddhist monks, you may remember, in Vietnam, who did burn themselves up. So I don't think a person is considered insane when they make such a claim. And if, but, you know, I naturally agree, if a city councilman takes this as a serious concern, then Silva should have been arrested immediately after he raised that image and that possibility. Instead, they should have been, according to a psychiatric professional I consulted, she told me, unless you have to do it within 48 hours or it's not considered, you can't do it at all. And he had made this statement to the mayor, I believe, 5 days before this council meeting. And I had seen him afterward. He had apologized to the mayor. He had apologized to everybody. He said he had been overwrought by the issue, that he'd apologized for any concerns he had raised. So they didn't have any serious basis for believing this. And, of course, when he was taken to the psych ward, he was released after an hour. All he wanted, by the way, from the city was an apology. Now he wants a lot of money. I think he should get considerably more than an apology. We need a set of guarantees that they're not going to do this to the next critic that they decide they want to take into custody. And they have been doing that to many critics. They've done it to me. They've done it to James Ney. They forced Phil Baer to leave the room. They have gone after a number of different people. Continuing, this public removal of a prominent critic had a significantly chilling effect on some of the Latino people who came to testify for their right to remain in their housing until such time as city council really offered them clear, strong, written guarantees that would make sure they weren't going to lose their housing and then not get back into a housing project. The council, of course, never offered such guarantees, because what they were really doing is they were playing the game of Mercy Charities housing, which requires that a significant number of the people currently living there leave so that a smaller number of people can go into a more spacious project, which is what they're planning to do. These people had seen this kind of thing happen in El Salvador, Guatemala, and Mexico with lethal consequences, critics dragged off like David Silva was. Several weeks ago, City Council halted any Citizens Police Review Board investigation